Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much. It is really a pleasure and an honor to be here. When it was first mentioned to me that I'd be doing this topic, I have to admit I was not entirely enthusiastic in terms of finding many things that are nogea to halacha or hashkafa. However, shortly after that, I was met by my daughter, who Baruch Hashem, we were zoche to have our first grandchild about 2 weeks ago. Thank you very much. Say something like, you look too young to be a grandfather. Thanks. I realized when she started getting sort of inundated with mailings such as these, which you probably can't see it from there, but we could pass it around, are from various cord blood companies that are very, very aggressive in recruiting couples to bank privately cord bloods. And they have very disarming sales pitches. For example, the cutest babies, you know, all babies are cute, but they start always, there's a very cute baby always on the picture of the brochure. And they'll say things like, for a lifetime of precious memories. And, you know, a new to be, soon to be mother and father are very, very easily taken in by that. And of course, my daughter came to me and said, Abba, Abba, what should we do? Should we do this? You know, it costs a fair amount of money, about $1,000 to $1,500 for the original procurement, and then an ongoing fee for maintaining the cord bloods. And she wanted to know if this was a smart thing to do. I don't think she was asking me from a halachic perspective at all. I began to see that this really has some significance to it. Right away, when you hear the opening to one of their brochures, a baby's umbilical cord blood is a valuable source of non-controversial stem cells. So that right away is a very revealing statement. What do they mean by that, non-controversial? Why are they emphasizing that? They're emphasizing that because as opposed to embryonic stem cells, which, as Eddie Reichman mentioned last night, are sort of involved in the controversy of the abortion issue and procurement, bearing in mind that the future might hold that we won't need to have any problems in procuring the stem cells, but currently there is. So adult stem cells, which is what cord blood cells are, do not have any of that ethical baggage to them. So, you know, right away, that's the earliest advertisement. But, and everyone, I'm going to be using not the slides, but the handout. If you take a look at the handout, I give you a sampling, actually, over there of one of the advertisements for a private donation. And, again, they always will have a story of a life-saving that takes place because of the cord bloods, and there's absolutely no question and there's no doubt. From a medical perspective, cord bloods are a fantastic innovation. They're as good as a bone marrow donation. They're doing the same thing. I'm assuming everybody has some familiarity with this. One would think that it's a davar pashut that I should have said to my daughter in the hopes of maintaining this biological insurance for the child to be, and as they point out, siblings possibly, I should encourage her to certainly do this. What's $1,500 and $100 a year, $150 a year for a lifetime of precious memories? However, the controversy comes in when, for example, you look at the table, the chart that they have on this advertisement, you'll notice that they're projecting things in a very clever way. If you look where it says advancements in cord blood cells, stem cells, it gives you 1988, 2009, and projecting to 2020. So one might ask right away, why would they need to give me 1988? Not much was happening. Give me 2009 and tell me all the great possibilities with cord blood cells. And don't talk about 2020 yet. But obviously, the agenda is to project that the same type of advance that took place between 1988 and 2009, all that progress in terms of the number of diseases that could potentially be cured and the probability, most importantly, the probability that these will be needed by the individual who's banking them, has also skyrocketed to 1 in 217, projects that by 2020, this is like a no-brainer, and absolutely everybody should do it. But that is really far from the consensus opinion in the medical community. If you turn the next few pages, What I quickly will run through is almost every medical organization of every country has come out uniformly, without exception, advising against doing this, against privately banking cord blood. And the basic reasons you could see there in detail in the recommendations, but it basically comes down to that, number one, is that when looking at any given individual, the chances are very, very small that they ultimately will be making use of the banked cord blood cells. To begin with, the baby themselves, from whom the cord blood cells were taken, would be there'd be tremendous hesitation for any hematologist later on to use that baby's own cord blood cells, because certainly in pediatric population up to the age of about 20, there would be a fear that whatever led to the illness that Rahman al-Islam, the baby is suffering or the child is suffering from at that time, was in the genes and would just be transmitted over again through that cord blood donation. So that they neglect to emphasize in the advertising, but the odds of the baby themselves are almost close to nothing, if not nothing, that they would end up being used. It is possible that a sibling would make use of them if they were Rahman al-Islam affected. But then again, still the odds of that happening are really estimated. Most, you know, there's not much out there on this, but the one reputable paper that came out estimated somewhere between 1 in 1,000 and 1 in 200,000 chance that this individual or anyone in their family or any given person would need those cord blood. So they came out against it. But they do promote something that's very, very important, which really brought to my mind an important hashkafic message in this entire sugya. And that is that donating to a bank for public use is very advisable. And they think that that is something that should be promoted universally, and that if a public bank were able to accrue enough samples, it would go a long way into providing all the needs for anyone, lo aleinu, that would ever need a stem cell type transplant. And basically, that is the consensus opinion. There is some controversy about it. As you'll see on page 4, I brought some of the advocates still of doing private banking. Again, shout out, autonomy, autonomy. You don't need any paternalistic doctors telling parents what to do. Let them have the choice, right? As Steinberg said last night, again, this is often the ethical cry, autonomy, and we're taking it away, these organizations, by advising against it, and we should still allow them to make their own choices. If they want to worry about the self-preservation of their own families, they should have a right to do it. So it isn't without controversy. There is certainly this controversy in regards to that. But what I obviously wanted to focus on in our setting is, so what are the halachic or hashkafic implications for us? What we'll see in the end, I hope, is that this general controversy between public and private banking is going to come back to be very significant, in the realm of halach and hashkaf. So to begin with, there was a nice piece. There is one piece written, it was published in Tchumen by Rabbi Yosef Eitan, that dealt with this topic, and in the beginning of it, he raised, and very quickly dismissed, as will I, one potential hashkafic issue. And that is, if you look on page 5, he cites a very famous Rashi on Chumash, wherein Chumash is discussing how the Umos HaOlam are using all these illicit methods predicting the future that we have to stay away from. So the Parsha ends with the following pasuk, Tamim Tia Im Hashem Elokecha, that a Jew is bidden to handle things differently. We're not going to be looking to predict the future, certainly not through these illicit means, but we're going to be living in a very simple way with Bitachon and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we shouldn't need to predict using these methods. And the famous Rashi over here emphasizes this fact, Yisalech Imo B'tzmimos V'tetzap Elo. Person should really lead his life in a very simple sort of fashion, a quiet fashion, and wait for Hashem's salvation. Hashem is going to be taking care of us. And the possibility was raised, is not the whole concept of banking these cord bloods for that potential eventuality, 1 in 200,000, 1 in 10,000, whatever the number is that not a breach of this hashkafa that a Jew is supposed to sort of lay back? Now, some of you might be disturbed by this as a philosophy. Is this really our philosophy? Is this really the Jewish approach? that we should, because it could be taken to dangerous extremes. The whole concept of sitting back and waiting for Kadosh Baruch Hu to take care of us doesn't necessarily jive, certainly not in a bioethics meeting, with the mainstream Jewish hashkafa. And in fact, the truth of the matter is, Rashi is the Das Yachid in terms of learning the pasuk this way. The other Mefarshei Chumash, the Rashbam, the Ramban, Sforno, learn Tamin Tia Im Hashem Elokecha very differently. That it really means that rather than use those illicit dark black magic methods, right, we should use mutter methods of predicting the future. Nevi'im or Mvatomim, we shouldn't be getting involved in that. It's a famous controversy. The Ramban really held, and these other Rishonim held, in the possibilities of these metaphysical powers that existed, that Hashem put into Bria. And we shouldn't be using the bad ones. They're kind of put there of a of Yaakov Kamenetsky explained that Hashem put such powers in to the universe to enhance our possibility of Bechira. This way, you know, with so many good forces, metaphysical, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Nevuah, all those other strong positive forces, they're balanced and giving the person the Bechira to choose between them. The Rambam, of course, felt somewhat differently, and he learns Tamim Tia Yim Hashem Elokecha just means don't be stupid. Don't be stupid enough to think there's any credence to this thing. Stay away from it. And don't have anything to do with it. So really the pshat that Rashi's giving on this whole pasuk is a minority view. And more than that, is something that seems to go against the idea of ishtadlus, which is really the emphasis of yadus in general. And the whole emphasis in the avoda hakodesh of being a physician, which is not to sit back and depend on miracles, but to move forward. But we have to give it some credence because in a famous tshuva related to Pesach's disease, where Moshe Feinstein actually brings it up, at least as a havamin, as a possibility, that or the Shoel was asking Rav Moshe, perhaps we shouldn't be testing for Pesach's, we shouldn't get involved in that, because it's, again, against this Rashi and this idea of not being choker achar hatidos and being mitzapet for Hashem. So Rav Moshe, at least in the context of Pesach's, he said, no, he didn't think so. There's no problem with testing for Tay-Sachs. Not exactly for what I would have wanted him to say at this point. He says because it's such an easy thing to do, to test for Tay-Sachs, that if you don't, it's skiras ha'inayim. It's like you're closing your eyes and denying what's going to be easily accessible to you, which is not the same thing that Rashi's referring to. What Rashi's referring to is going to great lengths and complexity in order to do it. So it again kind of revisits the possibility, maybe playing around with cord blood stem cells and the possibility that at some time in the future these will be a therapy, maybe that's still a breach of bitachon. And in truth, it's really related to another tshuva of Rav Moshe where he does finally say what I would say is the bottom line hashkafa on this issue, and that is the famous insurance tshuva of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe was asked by individuals, should they get life insurance? Is getting life insurance and other types of insurance, is that showing a lack of bitachon? And here, Moshe says, you know, he kind of dismisses it once and for all. That's not the way a Jew is meant to live his life. You don't be somach on a nes. Even a person who's the greatest tzaddik in the world, it's usher for him to be somach on a nes. And all of us have to live our lives with an optimal hishtadlus. We have to do everything we possibly can to meet all the challenges that HaKadosh Baruch Hu might present to us. And therefore, I would think that in terms of this issue, the cord bloods would fall right into the same area as all the other types of insurance. Just like I should get life insurance, I should get automobile insurance, house insurance, all the different insurances, so too, from a hashkafic perspective, there's nothing wrong with getting this biological insurance. In fact, it's almost, it's halachta b'drachav in a way. Famous Gemara in Megillah talks about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bore the refuah kodim l'makas. So he doesn't give any Machlach has v'shalom to Klal Yisrael without first creating the refuah. So we're emulating Hashem in preparing ourselves for any eventuality by getting the refuah ahead of time, or the potential refuah. So from Hashkafic perspective, I think we could put this to rest. There aren't any dissenting opinions. It's really, I even gave it more time than it deserves, and that I may have, that there's no complexity to this shaila. To me, Dabra Pashut, there is no tension involved in doing this. So where is the halachic relevance? What could possibly be related to halacha in this realm? So the real questions that come up, and I have been asked this question by couples, is in terms of Shabbos. What happens if we need to do the extraction of the cord blood cells on Shabbos? Am I allowed to do that? Is it in any way a Chilul Shabbos by going and having this done and allowing it to be done? So if you turn to page 7, for this you need to be a little familiar with the process. So on page 7 I have one of the outlines of exactly what's involved in the collection of cord bloods, and you'll see, if you're tuned into the Lachos of Shabbos, several potential areas of problems with taking these cord bloods on Shabbos. So to begin with, what happens is after the delivery of the baby, the cord is clamped, the baby is taken away. Now, I should make a comment on something that Eddie Reichman said last night. Kind of caught me for a moment somewhat by surprise. I almost had to change the entire discussion today. He mentioned this literature that says that there might be a problem with early clamping of the cord. And there might be some very beneficial effects of allowing these cord blood cells to go to the fetus. Now, were that to be the case, it would obviate, I think, to a large degree, this entire discussion. I don't think anyone would advocate putting to any degree, unless it's like really insignificant degree, but to any significant degree, to feed the baby, and any chisaron, to put any danger to the baby to promote some potential future use of those cord blood cells. So were that to be the case, if there was something significant that did not allow for the procurement, that would end the discussion. The truth is, I have seen literature on this issue of early clamping of the cord, mostly in regards to anemia as an issue, that this early transfusion of placental blood is good in terms of maximizing the hematocrit of the infant. And I think the companies are very savvy to it, and certainly the public banks are savvy to this as well. And they do make a point of saying that they delay enough to not endanger the child based on the data that we have as of now, so that they will not be clamping too early. So you don't clamp too early so that you cause any danger to the fetus. You clamp the cord to the now baby. Baby is delivered and cut away. And then you prep the cord with some iodine. So that becomes shiloh number one. You're coloring the cord, which brings up the potential problem of tzoveya, which is dyeing or coloring, which is a malacha daraisa. They then will take a needle, and there are two methods to do this. One is before the placenta is delivered, when you just have the cord coming out, the placenta is still attached to the uterus, which is, in a way, the preferred method. You can get more stem cells if you do it that way. And we'll see why that's relevant. It's very important, whether you're doing it with the placenta in or outside of the uterus. But the next event is the sticking a needle into the cord to take out the cells. And that brings up the very serious problem of chavala, wounding, which is another potential isidaraisa. Once they take out the cells, right, then they have to like package it up. Things like labeling and tying up could easily be taken care of. The label problem is not a problem that could be done before Shabbos or after Shabbos. But once you have those cells, they're certainly muksa. Right, the muksa for many reasons. The muksa, machmas nius, machmas kufan. There's several levels. There's nolad of muksa, which means they're not prepared, which means you're not allowed to really move them around in any way. And then finally, the last potential halachic problem on Shabbos is the problem of hachana, which is preparing on Shabbos for something after Shabbos. So three of these issues I'm going to dismiss very quickly. Tzoveya, hachana, and muksa are really going to be easily handled and should not be any bit of an obstacle to doing this on Shabbos. Tzoveya, which is dying, there's a Mishnah Berurah that clearly says that if it's derech lichluch, which means it's really not enhancing the cord to put the iodine there, it's not enhancing the anticoagulant when I add the blood to it and I'm coloring that. So all the tzoveya that's taking place is derech lichluch, that's number one. And it's on a surface that's not normally dyed. So for those two reasons, the Mishnah Berurah says, when you really need to do it, no problem. So the Taveya issue is easily dismissed. Then, in terms of Hachana, that also is going to be very easily dismissed. Hachana means preparing on Shabbos something for after Shabbos, which the one who develops this, I think, the most beautifully is the Marshag, who explained that what this is really about, and this is something to be mindful of in general on Shabbos, is it's all about stealing Shabbos time to make up chol time, which means doing things on Shabbos in order to not have to use that time on a weekday, so I'm going to steal some of that free time on Shabbos. That's kind of the idea behind it. That's why if there's no tircha, real serious travail involved, and it's a davar ha'avod, it's something that you have a once-in-a-lifetime chance, where you're doing it because you're going to lose the opportunity, so if you put those two things together, then it's going to be no problem of halchana. That's basically what's happening here for sure. You don't get a second chance, of course, what tells, right? This is your one opportunity. The baby's born in Shabbos, there's nothing you can do about it. If you don't do it now, you're never going to get to do it. So I'm not stealing Shabbos time for chol. I have no choice, but I have to do it now. So the halchana, really, I think the poskim would have no problem with it as well. And then muksa is a little more tricky. I won't go into some of the details. But ultimately, in the United States, certainly, when often it could be a nochri, so certainly muksa yidei nochri is going to be, by a non-Jew, is going to really obviate that issue. And there's also what to talk about in terms of a heter muksa, just the makom hefsid meruba, when there's a tremendous loss, which is this would be, right, because it is, again, once-in-a-lifetime chance, that would allow for the muksa also to be put off the table. So that leaves us really with one issue, chavala. And it's a pretty complex issue, which I'm going to try to run through relatively quickly. And I'll just summarize it as follows. I have some of the sources on pages 8 and 9 and 10, but I'll say it quickly outside, and we'll just focus on page 9. Chavala, what is this malacha of not being able to wound? Where does it come from? So it's a discussion in the Gemara of Kuf Zayin Shabbos. There's a machlokas Rishonim exactly why is wounding a biblical prohibition to such a high degree. So the vast majority of Rishonim say it's netilas neshama. What does netilas neshama mean? It means really taking out the soul, taking out some of the soul. And therefore it is a tolda of shchita, of slaughtering. Slaughtering was one of the 39 malachos. Netilas neshama is a sort of subtopic, a subgrouping of that ism. How does it work? So basically, the Bali Tosos explain that the bottom line is that we consider Adam hu ha-nefesh, that the blood is containing to some degree metaphysically the soul, and when you extract blood from a living organism, you take it away from its source, that is netilas neshama, that is taking away some of the neshama. That's why plain old drawing blood on Shabbos is an issa d'oraisa. One cannot draw blood on Shabbos unless it's a chalish yishpos hakana. You can't do it for any other purpose. Oh, we'll get to that in a minute. That's a minority opinion of the Rambam. The vast majority of poskim say netilas neshama, right? Rambam, Deiri, Rashba, Mishnah Berurah will tell you it's netilas neshama. There's one dissenting opinion which is going to be very important for our purposes, the Rambam, who says it's dash, which we'll get back to in a minute. Let me just stick with netilas neshama for a moment, which is the majority opinion. And it really is something that is going to make for difficulty with drawing out this blood on Shabbos. How's it work? So netilas neshama has one heter that's unique to it. Whenever we do any of the 39 etchas sham, whenever one is concerned with the iser of a malacha on Shabbos, they're always concerned with doing it as a malacha smach Shabbos. There are certain outs of the biblical prohibition, where if all these criteria are not fulfilled, you've not really done the iser. So, for example, it has to be done the kavana, it has to be done with intention, it has to be done for the purpose it was done in the Mishkan. There are all these criteria. It has to be in a constructive way. By netilas neshama, by chavala, by wounding, the Gemara in Ksuvos mentions there's another criteria. In order to be over on this avera, it has to be chaburei mechbar. And not nifkod pocket. What does that mean? It has to be, basically, to cut to the chase without going through that whole sugya, it has to be part of the circulation. If we're going to talk about this being an example of extracting the soul, netilas neshama, it has to be part of a living circulation. Therefore, certainly, let's say with our example, when the baby is attached to the cord and the mother, that circulation is part of a living circulation between the mother and the baby, and is clearly, any extraction of blood at that point from the cord is blisafeg netilas neshama. You're taking the blood away from the life source, and that would be an issa d'oraisa. Question is, what happens when I take the baby away? this becomes the whole controversy to some degree, or not, depending on your opinion on this issue. When the cord is just hanging out, attached to the uterus, what do we consider it? Do we consider that now still attached to the circulation? Is this really chaburei mechbar or mifkad pakid? Mifkad pakid means that it's not really part of the living circulation. It's outside of the circulation. In the words of Rashi, it's like in a room separate from the circulation. So relieving any blood there, right? Let's say somebody had a hematoma, and the hematoma is already outside the circulation. That would not be an issa d'oraisa to evacuate, do an IND on a hematoma or any other kind of fluid that's outside the circulation. Would not be the same issa d'oraisa. It's problems derabanan, but it certainly wouldn't be chabura that would be an issa d'oraisa. So what is the status? That becomes the whole essential question of the cord blood at this point. So if you look on page 9, just a quick review of fetal circulation, the top picture shows you there's the placental circulation on the left, the baby on the right. It's a little misleading because it projects it as a normal capillary situation in any organ in the body. In truth, if you go to the middle picture, that's really the setup. Anyone familiar with uterine placental circulation, it's a little more complicated. It isn't the normal setup of a contiguous venous arterial capillary connection. What we have is this very nice setup of the fetal villi coming from the chorionic plate up, being bathed by blood that's released from those uterine spiral arteries that are coming from the maternal circulation. So the question is, does this constitute, now that the baby's not there anymore, what is this? So I have to say, Rav Yosef Eitan, who wrote the article in Tchumen, his feeling, right, was that he thought that once the cord is out of the body and it's like this, that's no longer Netilas Neshama, shouldn't be a problem. In my little discussions with different Rabbanim about this, post-skim, not so sure. They're calling it a suffix. It still might be a suffix Issa D'oraisa, which would mean we can't really get involved in it. However, if you do use the method of taking the placenta out of the body, right, which is that second alternative method, they say that would be okay. So that might be the whole solution. If it's going to be a Jewish person who's giving birth to a child and they want to get the cord bloods, just tell them to use the method where the placenta is delivered. You put the placenta up, you let it drip out, and that'll be the end of the story. The only problem is the Rambam Shita. Right? This might satisfy Rov Rishonim in terms of if the prohibition is Netilas Neshama, that type of issue where Chaburei Mechbar versus Mechbar Pakid, those two types of circulation could be differentiated, and once we have the placenta out, we're now, according to everybody, dealing with Nifkad Pakid, which is therefore not part of the living circulation, which is therefore okay, fine. But the Rambam says the Isra of Chavala is not Netilas Neshama, but it's Dash. Dash refers to threshing, which in the Mishkan took place, let's say the wheat and the chaff were separated, that connection being separated, that's Dash. A Tolga of Dash is Tchita, which is extracting a liquid from a solid, squeezing it out. So the Rambam says that's what you're doing every time you take blood out of a human person or extract blood in any being. Nothing to do with neshamos or circulations. It's all about just extracting the blood from inside. So according to the Rambam, we might have a problem no matter where the blood is and where the placenta is. Even having the placenta out of the body, you haven't really accomplished anything because perhaps we're still extracting and doing dash, which would also be a biblical prohibition, which would absolutely put a stop to the whole process on Shabbos. However, in a fairly technical, halachic, sort of lamdisha explanation, that's a little warning, by the way, about what I'm about to say, there is possibly a way out of this even within the Rambam. And it sort of goes like this. The Rambam has a difficulty. Anyone pick up on what the Rambam's difficulty is? The Rambam is telling us that when it comes to Dash, right, and that's what Chovel is, so it doesn't make a difference. Whether it be Nifka Pakid or Chaburei Mechbar, no problem. Right? Either way. So what's really difficult for him, and this is hard to get when you run through these things so quickly, but the Gemara in Ksuvos clearly differentiates when it comes to a wound between those two situations. So what does the Rambam do with that Gemara? Right? I don't know if you understand the question, but basically the Rambam has to explain that there must be some difference whenever it comes to wounding between these two types of situations. So, to make a long story short, bottom line is, for the Rambam, it's going to have to do with how you get the liquid out. that's what the differentiation is. That if you're going to be squeezing, doing an active squeezing, that will be usur under all conditions. But if it's going to be a passive letting the blood flow out, that's where the Gemara in Kesubos is talking about. That's where there'll be a difference between those two situations. So at the end of the day, now how do we take cord blood out of a cord? It's a passive syringe method or just a drip method. So there again, the Rambam even would be makil, theoretically, even if we considered the problem of dash. So at the end of the day, one can squeeze out, even within the Rambam, as well as the majority sheet, a way to sort of lower the level of the prohibition. What I really want, I have like 4 minutes left or 3 minutes, I want to get to the most important issue, the most relevant. Because the truth is that there are still many poskim that would not be comfortable with the explanations that I gave, and would still see this as a very significant potential problem on Shabbos, which would knock out the possibility that you can extract this blood. The question, and I would think where the Musar comes, is what about Pikuach Nefesh? Isn't this Pikuach Nefesh? Don't we have like a life-saving therapy that we're trying to take out of this baby that we're going to use to save his life or save his sibling's life? Shouldn't that make a difference? So to quickly run through this issue, on page 12 I give you the Makaros. It is very, very well known to everybody that when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh and life-saving, Ein Hochin Achar Arod, we're never concerned with it having to be a likely possibility. Any possibility at all that what I'm doing will save a life, do it. Forget about Shabbos. We don't worry about Rove. So I don't care if it's 1 in 200,000, I don't care if it's 1 in 10,000. Shouldn't I be allowed to do whatever I need to do to get these cord blood cells out on Shabbos? So the answer is not so fast. Very, very famous. When it came to the autopsy question, that's where this really came out originally, isn't every autopsy the same thing? Why aren't all autopsies mutter? Because potentially, the information that I garner from the autopsy is going to help save somebody's life. And I don't care if it's 1 in a million. Ein holchin achar rov, I don't care. So, the Nod Yehuda, the Chasam Sofer, very famous for saying, introducing something that you could see in Chazal itself, not for now, but the idea that we need a cholel lefaneinu. We don't just say blanket, any possibility is going to be Docha Shabbos. But we need some tangible sakana in front of us. Mechazanish even extended, it's more than just the guf, you don't need the guf in front of you, but at least you need the sakana to be here and now. If you don't have the sakana, if you don't have the danger present, then you can't just say everything goes, because there'll be ein ladavar sof, right? There'll be no end to it. We could all come up with scenarios where almost everything is open territory, should be put to anything could lead to a sakana sofashim. So, according to this, if you don't have a present danger, then perhaps we will go according to the rove. And the only way you'll be able to be Mechal Shabbos is if, in the majority of cases, that eventuality that you worry about, that's not here presently, will occur. And in fact, on page 13, I bring you two Achronim, including Rav Waldenberg, Mr. Eliezer, and the Binyan Sion, Rav Ettinger, who both hold this way. They will tell you that if there's no present danger now, and you're just worried about a potential future one, then we're only going to allow you to be over on Yisurei Daraisa if it's the majority of times that it will occur. Otherwise, no. Importantly for us, and for many who hold by Rav Shlomo Zalman very famously didn't agree with that approach. And he has a different approach, which is really the one that I would adopt. And that is that, what do we do in these cases where we don't know for sure and we're expecting a potential sarcoma? Sometimes we're really worried about it. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, he uses the concept of kevan dedachu be'rabim shomer psalim Hashem, which basically means that a person is not allowed to put themselves in danger. Does that mean I can take zero risk? No, sometimes I can take a little bit of risk. How much risk? Societal norm. Whatever society, right, reminiscent of one of Rabbi Steinberg's slides last night, if society dictates that this is an acceptable amount of risk, then you're allowed to take it. So he takes the flip side of that. He says society will define for us what is danger and what is not. And that's how it will work with being doche, wiping out Yisurei Shabbos as well. By saying that if society says this is something we worry about, this is a dangerous situation, then you could say that's a sakana, that is Docha Shabbos, that's Pikuach Nefesh. So we have to decide. In our case, of cord bloods, for example, do we consider the procurement of these cells to be warranted because there's a societally accepted danger down the road? If we do, forget about Shabbos. If we don't, then you can't forget about Shabbos. So what does it come down to? So the Phoenix diet, it comes down to one thing, private versus public banking, which is where we're going to return now to the general society's concern. When it comes to private banking, there's very little societal worry. As you see from all those medical organizations, none of them are worried about this. Everyone's telling the young couples, don't do the private banking. The odds of your baby needing it, or even siblings, are incredibly small. It is not a societally accepted risk, and therefore certainly would not be Doche Shabbos. However, public banking is something that has almost immediate, potentially, use. And I can't go into all the numbers now, but there's definitely documentation that shows that, let's say, by 5 years in a public bank, 20% are used. There's a very significant need for it. And one could argue, I mean, it has to be worked out in detail, that public banking might make it to the threshold of pikuach nefesh because it's a societal need. Currently now, when you look at a large group of people, there are people that will benefit from those cord blood stem cells. And the last comment, and then I'll take all the questions, is that therefore my recommendation to my daughter and to everybody would be to bank publicly. Don't do it privately, not because of Shabbos concerns. Shabbos is just kind of a cute way for me to get to my mussar. My mussar is, you know, you have very unique opportunities that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us to do acts of chesed. Rambam tells us in the Perush Mishnah, you get to do it b'chokhmaso, b'mamono, b'gufo too. So he's really referring to making efforts, but here's a literal bodily chesed. You could do with the body or the cells of your baby, you get a chance to do a tremendous act of chesed, which if you could just forego your self-preservation need and realize how much it will be beneficial to the public, then that's the way to go. Currently, just to mention, there are there's a push for Jewish banks, in particular in Eretz Yisrael and in the United States. And I think that would probably be the best way to go here. Thank you very much.
You mentioned about wounding on Shabbos. Isn't that an everyday thing? Are you not supposed to wound anyway?
Ah, very good. So it is true that Asur Adam to Chova Ba'atzmo or to anybody else, by Yosef, it's a lav in the Torah. It's definitely a biblical prohibition. But as we know, as physicians, we are doing that all the time. So if it's litzorach, and actually I'm going to talk a lot more about this on Sunday when I get into selling organs, if there is a significant tzorach, as this would constitute, so that lav, that immediately is off the table, and we don't really concern ourselves. Yes, absolutely. The starting point for this is they have been shown over and over again in many, many different diseases to be beneficial. The cord blood cells themselves, they're used more and more. They have certain advantages even over conventional bone marrow. They're more readily available. There's less graft versus host disease. And they've been proven efficacy. There's no question it's a refuvaduka. No question. It's a good question, though, because you don't get into pikuach nefesh until you say that. Yeah, that's part of the hype.
Right now, right. To get leukemia, it's worth paying something that's a very, very specific therapy for a very specific disease. It's not,
Right, so, well, there's more. It's more than just leukemia. There are about, it is hematological diseases and certain other metabolic diseases that are currently, it's being used for. There's no question that it's a very popular therapy right now, and it's going to really be being used more and more. All the conjecture and projection that it'll be, you know, working for somebody who loses some of their cardiac muscle or for all these other things is very hypothetical at this point, no question.
It seems like the ideal would be to put some products together every time you're in the nation, part of those your own private systems that you want to put
in there. And the other half, that's all right. Right. So currently, no. Actually, that would be nice. And right now there's a problem. One of the problems altogether, even if you take the full amount that you take out, It's enough for at most a 50 kilo person, or like up to maybe even 100 now. Well, people are working on that. And that, again, is part of what, when these debates in the general literature come out, and one of the points is that we don't have enough, so people are saying there's a lot of research going on about doing that. It's not been effectively done yet. So it's really, you don't have the choice of doing both. What you do have is, A, when you go public banking, if at Chas V'Shalom, a time when the family needs it themselves, it's still available, then they would be able to get it out. There are certain countries that do the following. I think Germany and maybe Japan, they have a law that anyone who privately banks, it must be available to the public. So it's interesting. It's almost the opposite of what you're saying. Like, everybody's private donation is now available to anyone who might need it, and again, they'll only get it if it's still around at the time that they might use it. But you're right. The perfect world would be to do the chesed and have it available for yourself as well.
Thank you for your excellent presentation. I just want to make three comments. One is that there's another issue involved, and that is kosher. You have to tie
right.
Leg, otherwise everything will be split down, and it's a kosher shakayama because it has to stay. And that's one of the major issues. How do you do it right on Shabbos when you want to preserve it? That's another.
Although some people talk about using a clamp instead.
Yeah,
it's not
alone,
right. Until after, right. Maybe after Shabbos is over.
It's not easy to
right. And all you do not.
Second, just as a caveat to the Kuach Nefesh issue, nowadays you can do PGD with a
right, so that, although it raises another potential ethical problem, and that is, let's say, what the Rabbi Steinberg is referring to, and this was another controversy, I didn't get to it, obviously, is that, let's say, Rahman al-Tzon, a family has an afflicted child, and now they want to get cord bloods quickly, or get cord bloods in time for the eventuality that that child is going to need a bone marrow transplant. So the issue comes up about having a baby for the purpose of having the cord blood cells available. Can they do that? So having a baby, why not? And have the cord blood cells available, why not? But they're not necessarily going to be matched. So there is the use of PGD to check out maybe which one is HLA compatible and use that one, go forward with that one, you know, IVF. And it brings up a very controversial issue of what happens to the ones that didn't make it, that are not HLA compatible. And would you be allowed to use that technology in order to
that
right. Right, because it's called the Marbon Yom, and it's going to be Sarach Gadol.
It's a whole big cool.
Right.
But just to tell you the fact that I said that we have a lot of committee composed of a lawyer and I'm an appendix to it, and we are discussing this matter, and at the moment, as I said, it's not about now to make a process that will be okay.
Okay.